This month marks the 50th anniversary of the Clean Water Act, and one river that has made a comeback is the Delaware. It flows through four states, and its banks host concerts, fireworks, and festivals. But for much of the 20th century, the Delaware River stank. South of Trenton, no fish could survive. In the first of a three-part series produced by WHYY in 2019 called Reviving the River, Dana Bate reports on what made the Delaware so bad.
It's 9:30 on a Tuesday morning, and Joe Newton is taking his 20-foot motorboat onto the Delaware River from the Neshaminy State Marina in Bucks County, Pennsylvania. He comes to the river to fish, sometimes as often as four times a week. But when he first moved to the area in 1975, he couldn't fish here.
I'm originally from North Jersey, and I grew up fishing the northern Delaware, which is basically pristine water. You can eat the fish, the water's clear. When I came down here, you wouldn't dare eat the fish. And the water had about maybe 3 foot visibility and a lot of debris.
It didn't smell good and it didn't look good.
That's Newton's buddy, Ron Soto. Soto's grandfather was a tugboat captain on the Delaware through the 1950s. As a young boy, Soto would sometimes ride with him.
I said, how's the fishing here in the river when I'd be on this tugboat? And he'd say, there's no fish. I said, why not? He said, well, there's an oxygen barrier in the water and there's no oxygen here. Consequently, the fish can't live.
What Soto was referring to is something called dissolved oxygen, DO for short. Fish breathe oxygen just like people do, only their oxygen is dissolved in water. Fish generally need about 5 parts per million to thrive. But in 1964, DO levels were nearly zero in parts of the river around Philadelphia. The reason? Poop.
Back in the 50s and 60s, we were just dumping all of our sewage right into the river. And that goes back to really to colonial times.
That's Danielle Krieger, a scientist with the Partnership for the Delaware Estuary. Standing by a pier on the Delaware, she explains that sewage breeds bacteria in the water, and that bacteria eats up all the oxygen. By 1964, about 1 million pounds of waste was going into the river every day. More than 60% of that came from sewage treatment plants, with cities like Philadelphia, Camden, and Wilmington contributing the most. But it wasn't just sewage. There was blood from slaughterhouses, oil from refineries, and toxic waste from chemical companies. Almost none of the waste was disinfected, so it contained high levels of bacteria, again, eating up all of the oxygen. Richard Pepino was studying biology in the 1960s. Standing by Penn's Landing today, he remembers his college professor sending his class onto the Delaware to measure the oxygen levels.
We were getting no readings, and so they said, somebody's got to tell a professor the machine's broken. I said, well, I'm not going to tell him. The machine wasn't broken. There was no oxygen. How can you support an ecosystem where the amount of oxygen was too low to measure?
The answer was, you couldn't. The dead zone on the river ran from Philadelphia to about 25 miles downriver in Marcus Hook. That made it impossible for migratory fish like shad to breed. They would die on their journey upstream before they could lay their eggs in the upper Delaware. Once plentiful caviar and sturgeon also disappeared. That spelled the death of a regional industry once worth hundreds of millions of dollars. But even for people who didn't fish, Pepino says the river just wasn't a place people wanted to be.
You look out on the river today, it looks appealing. It did not look appealing in those days.
The decomposing bacteria gave off noxious hydrogen sulfide fumes. Some shipping vessels refused to dock in Philadelphia because it smelled so bad. A World War II Army pilot claimed he could smell the river from 5,000 feet in the sky, and the fumes would react with the lead paint on ship hulls and turn them black. Various clean water campaigns gained support but then sputtered out. Cleaning up the river was going to be expensive, and the country's money had been tied up in World War II. But then something started happening.
The people were fed up.
Pepino says in the 1960s, a large populist movement was afoot. And even people who didn't think of themselves as activists started pushing to clean up the river.
People just didn't want dirty air and dirty water. My mom used to, we lived in West Philadelphia. She used to hang out her sheets And when she went to pick them up at the end of the day, she was ticked off because they had soot on them. And my mother and my father were not really environmental activists, but they wanted the environment clean.
Then, in 1969, something unbelievable happened.
A river caught fire.
The highly industrial and polluted Cuyahoga River in Cleveland, Ohio, caught fire after sparks from a passing train lit oil-slicked debris ablaze.
One could hardly imagine a scenario when a river caught fire. And many people think that was the turning event that forced the Congress to take very serious action with both the Clean Air Act and the Clean Water Act.
In 1972, Congress passed the Clean Water Act with broad bipartisan support. President Richard Nixon vetoed the bill, but within a day, Congress overturned the veto and the bill became law. The newly minted Environmental Protection Agency was responsible for enforcing the law, and Pepino got a job there after grad school. The law made it illegal to dump any pollutant into waterways without a permit from the EPA and set wastewater standards for industry. It also offered up money to cities and states to upgrade their sewage treatment plants. As an avid fisherman, Joe Newton says even a decade in, he could see a change.
By 80, 82, there was a huge difference, absolute huge difference.
The water started looking cleaner, and the fish slowly started to return. Shad, herring, all sorts of bass. These days, you can catch striped bass that are nearly 40 pounds.
In this river, that's amazing. In the ocean, common, but not out here. We had the best shad run I think I've ever seen this past season on the Delaware River.
But the law wasn't an overnight success. It took decades of work, more than $1 trillion, and lots of trial and error before the Clean Water Act lived up to its name.
That was Dana Bate reporting for WHYY in a series called Reviving the River. In the coming weeks, we'll hear more about how the Delaware benefited from the Clean Water Act and how the historic law is being challenged today. And to read how the Clean Water Act cleaned up the Ohio River watershed, go to our website, AlleghenyFront.org/goodriver.